Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out my website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with France 24 and its weekly show called French Connections. Recently, I found myself saying that only the United States has free speech and then wondering what that actually meant. So here's a conversation about the history of free speech in France, including the story of the satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo. In 2015, there were deadly attacks on the staff for publishing caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad. And people in many countries defended the magazine by saying, "Je suis Charlie." The U.S. has given Hamas an ultimatum 21-point peace plan that must be accepted in 3 or 4 days. An interview with Fatih Nimer in Ramallah, he's a policy fellow at the Al-Shabaka think tank. He discusses how the proposed peace plan is being viewed in Palestine and what might happen if an agreement is reached or rejected. France 24.
It's time now for French Connections, our weekly look at the intricacies of life here in France with our very own Florence Villeneuve. Hi, Flo.
Hey, Jeannie.
This week, we're going to take a step back and take a deep dive into the freedom of speech. Now, this has been in the news a lot, stateside, obviously, following the assassination of the influential conservative activist Charlie Kirk, the temporary suspension of the stand-up Jimmy Kimmel and his show. But we wanted to take a look at how things stand here in France, actually, compared to the United States.
Well, freedom of speech is seen as a fundamental freedom in France that dates all the way back to the French Revolution. In fact, it's enshrined in French law by Article 11 of the Declaration of the Rights of Man and the Citizen from 1789, which is part of France's constitutional framework. So let's look at Article 11. It says that the free communication of ideas and opinions is one of the most precious of the rights of man. Every citizen may accordingly speak, write, and print with freedom, but shall be responsible for such abuses of this freedom as shall be defined by the law. So as you can see, there are limits in France.
Right. And the European Convention on Human Rights also protects freedom of expression in France. And like in many democracies, freedom of expression is not absolute. You can't say anything you want to say. What are some of the things that are actually punishable by French law?
Well, there are strict laws, particularly the Freedom of the Press Law from 1881, which is often described as liberté surveillée. So a supervised freedom, because while it grants wide-ranging freedom, it also sets very strict legal limits regarding, for instance, defamation or insults. For instance, if you attack someone's honor or reputation, particularly when it comes to their ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, or even if they have a handicap. And this is where it's very different from the United States, where hate speech is actually protected by the First Amendment. And you can also see there are strict legal limits when it comes to incitement of hatred or violence with, say, racist or anti-Semitic or sexist or even homophobic speech. There is a big difference in France between targeting ideas and targeting people. Now, if you say something illegal in France, you can be fined or even face a prison sentence. And there have been some very high-profile examples of this. For instance, the actress Brigitte Bardot, she has been fined several times for racial discrimination, or even the stand-up comedian Dieudonné. He was fined and received a prison sentences, same thing for racial discrimination. That being said, it's very hard to monitor hate speech in France, particularly online. And this was very clear after the vicious murder of Samuel Paty, a secondary school teacher, following a class he gave on freedom of speech.
Now, French law goes even further than just protecting public order, dignity, and the rights of others. It also punishes what we call here the apology of terrorism, which means praising or encouraging terrorists, as well as the denial of crimes against humanity.
That's right. In 1990, France passed something called the Loi Guesseau. Now, the main purpose of this law was to combat racism and anti-Semitism and xenophobia. But it's actually most famous for a specific provision, and that is the criminalization of Holocaust denial. Now, violators can face up to 1 year in prison and a fine of 45,000 euros. There was a massive debate around this law that continues today, it must be said, with supporters seeing this as a necessary safeguard against anti-Semitism and the falsification of history and the spread of hate speech. But critics say this restricts freedom of expression and, you know, history should not be legislated. It's up to historians to really set things straight.
And so we can't talk about freedom of speech here in France without talking about Charlie Hebdo.
That's right. The satirical magazine became globally known for its very provocative cartoons, including depictions of religious figures like the Prophet Muhammad. And publishing these cartoons, we must remember, is legal here in France because, you know, even though they might be very offensive to some people, there are no blasphemy rules here in France. It's not a crime, for instance. Now, you'll remember in 2015, terrorists murdered 12 people at Charlie Hebdo's offices. And this tragedy sparked a movement in defense of freedom of speech that was really, could all come down to this expression du jour that I chose, je suis Charlie. We saw people coming out saying, I am Charlie, really to show just how much they wanted to defend freedom of expression here in France, but around the world as well.
Now, interestingly, in the wake of the assassination of Charlie Kirk in the United States, people there started picking up this slogan, I am Charlie.
That's right. They're saying, I am Charlie. And it's interesting because some people here in France have taken offense to that. While others argue, you know, whether you agree with them or not, Charlie Kirk also was a defender of freedom of speech. But this tale of two Charlies really does illustrate a key difference between France and the United States when it comes to free speech. Because in France, it's very paternalistic. You know, the state actively polices the boundaries of free speech, whereas in the United States, there's minimal government interference. In many ways, it's a free market of ideas. It's private actors like social media or, employers. They'll really decide the limits or of what they'll tolerate when it comes to speech. And so we've seen in the United States, for instance, some people have lost their jobs because they criticized Charlie Kirk, something that most probably would be defended by freedom of speech laws here in France.
It's certainly interesting to compare the two. Thanks so much for that, Florence Villemenot, with that French Connections. Don't forget, if you want to take a closer look or check out any of the other French Connections that we've done for you, you can always do that on our website. The address is france24.com.
The United States has given the Palestinian group Hamas an ultimatum. President Donald Trump says they've got 3 to 4 days to accept his 21-point peace plan and get in line alongside the Israelis or face the consequences. Trump was clear when he spoke to journalists after his White House meeting with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu 24 hours ago that failure to comply would open Hamas to Israel stepping up its military operation. The situation will get worse, with Trump vowing full backing to whatever Israel decides to do. And Netanyahu's words to Hamas were these: it's either the easy way, i.e. comply, or the hard way, which would be more Palestinian deaths in a stepped-up Israeli attack. Let's get some analysis of the situation and bring in Fatih Nimer, who is a Palestinian policy fellow at the Al-Shabaka think tank in Ramallah, joining us live from the West Bank. Fatih, thanks for joining us here in France 24. We appreciate your presence and your time. This ultimatum from Trump to Hamas, I'm wondering how this 21-point deal is being viewed in the Palestinian territories. Can you give us some insight, please, into that?
Well, I mean, it's less being seen as a deal and more seen as a surrender diktat, basically. I don't know what more Trump could do to threaten Hamas at this point, what more Netanyahu could be doing to Gaza at this point, because there has been no really red lines either by the Biden administration or by the Trump administration. But to say it more simply, the plan is basically a surrender plan. It's very vague and imprecise. It's obvious that it is, contoured around Israeli demands and Israeli interests, with Palestinians being a mere afterthought. And this makes sense basically because also the Arab states and the media has no clue about some of the changes that Netanyahu made at the last minute. And this is also part of why they are furious about it in you know, private leaked memos. But the thing is about it is that there's absolutely no guarantees that Israel will abide by it. Even if Hamas decided to go to the letter and do everything, there are absolutely no guarantees. Everything in the language is vague. It's imprecise. It's saying there might be a path towards statehood. They're saying depending on reformations. And these are very big, you know, loopholes or gray space areas where Netanyahu could very simply say, well, I'm not satisfied and I want to break it. And we saw this. Israel unilaterally broke a ceasefire in March of this year. And it could very easily do that somewhat more. It's not exactly the most reliable partner to be negotiating with since it's tried to assassinate multiple negotiating teams. So I'm sure that Hamas and other groups in Gaza are discussing this, but I don't have any illusions about them thinking that this is going to be some kind of deal that will actually end the genocide that is currently going on, especially considering that they want Hamas to disband all of its weapons, disband itself, basically surrender unilaterally, and to give up all the prisoners that they have within 72 hours, after which there's absolutely no reason why Netanyahu could not go back to war. And as we saw earlier, nobody's stopping him. There have been no repercussions really from the United States, and every red line that was spoken about was crossed with barely any kind of consequence.
So in terms of what we have, 3 to 4 days, says Trump, for Hamas to give its reply. If it doesn't comply with this, then basically things could get a lot worse for people in the Gaza Strip. You've mentioned genocide, and many authorities are saying it is genocide which is happening. And certainly the figures, if you look at them, 66,000 Palestinians, many of them women and children, killed since October the 7th, 2023, when Hamas launched its attack on southern Israel. I mean, clearly, there is a major, major death toll, and people are suffering, and there is famine in places as well. It is a horrible situation by any stretch of the imagination. Is it not perhaps time for Hamas to look to, in some way, shape or form, to stop what is happening by perhaps agreeing to this deal?
Listen, it's easy for me to sit here and kind of pontificate about this. I have a full belly. I'm sitting in my own home. I'm not sleeping in the streets. Ultimately, the decision will be taken by the people of Gaza. And Hamas is not some, you know, foreign or alien body. Hamas is made up of the people of Gaza, and Gaza are made up of the people of Hamas and other factions. And it's very popular at this point. It's difficult to see what they are planning, because again, they are privy to information we do not know, and they have their own, you know, calculus of how everything goes. You could argue that if they surrendered, everything will go okay, but again, I give you the West Bank as the counterfactual. The counterfactual is the West Bank is completely, unprecedentedly under attack in every single way. So again, there's very little indication on, even if Hamas agreed to all of this, that the situation will actually get better. It's like, this is not something that's just happening. This is something that's been going on for decades and decades, and we have such a long kind of memory of this. And I think it'll be a mistake to just look at the last 2 years if it was a separate escalation or a separate kind of deal, because it's not.
Fatenima, we appreciate your time and we appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. And I would add that you're joining us from Ramallah in the West Bank. You say you're sitting there somewhere comfortable, but you know, you're seeing things on a day-to-day basis, and what you're telling us is basically informed by the experience that you've lived through. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Those interviews were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. As of today, Thursday, Israeli military forces had intercepted dozens of the boats that are part of the relief flotilla headed to Gaza. Around 500 people were aboard those 40 vessels, and those on the captured boats were taken ashore. Italy had sent a naval warship to protect the passengers, but backed off before the Israeli soldiers removed the crews using automatic weapons. Italy had mass demonstrations supporting the flotilla for a week before the seizure, and that night, tens of thousands flooded the streets in protest across the country. An interview with journalist and Cambridge lecturer Alina Trebatoni, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Israeli naval forces have intercepted dozens of boats that were part of a flotilla of over 40 vessels carrying aid to Gaza. Israel says the ships were safely stopped and their passengers transferred to Israel, from where they will be deported back to Europe. The activists who were detained say their vessels were seized illegally in international waters. Several other boats in the flotilla say they're continuing their journey towards Gaza.
You're seeing an Israeli Navy vessel near one of the flotilla boats sailing towards Gaza. A short while later, it's intercepted. Israeli military officers board the boat and detain the activists on board. And here the same happens on another vessel. The Global Sumud Flotilla is made up of more than 40 boats. In total, around 500 people from dozens of countries were on board the vessels. They include politicians, lawyers and activists. Their aim, to transport humanitarian aid for Palestinians in Gaza and break the Israeli blockade of the enclave. Israel has previously said the flotilla is violating its, quote, lawful naval blockade, and asked organisers to change course. The foreign ministry said it had offered to transfer the aid to Gaza. In a post on X, the ministry said several vessels of what they called a Hamas Sumud flotilla, despite no proven links to the Islamist group, had been, quote, safely stopped and those aboard were being transferred to an Israeli port. They added, referring to the climate activist Greta Thunberg, Greta and her friends are safe and healthy. In several posts on Telegram, the Global Sumud Flotilla wrote that Israeli naval forces intercepted and boarded the boats in international waters. They said the interception was an illegal attack on unarmed humanitarians and called on governments and international institutions to demand their immediate safety and release. Several countries have condemned Israel's actions. Turkey's foreign ministry called Israel's, quote, attack on the flotilla an act of terror that endangered the lives of innocent civilians. Malaysia's prime minister wrote that Israel has shown utter contempt not only for the rights of the Palestinian people, but also for the conscience of the world. The UK's foreign office said it was very concerned about the situation. Ireland's prime minister, the Taoiseach, described the developments as very concerning. Spain's prime minister said all Spanish citizens had full diplomatic protection. Israel's actions against the flotilla sparked protests in several countries, including here in Greece, in Argentina, and in Malaysia. In Italy, unions have called a national strike on Friday in support of the flotilla.
I want to take a closer look at the protest. The interception of the Gaza flotilla has triggered in Italy, and bring in freelance journalist Alina Trabattoni. Alina, good to see you. Demonstrations in a number of cities last night. How much support do the activists have among the Italian public?
Well, you can visibly see that the support is massive, because as soon as the news broke out last night, people just took to the streets. Around, tens of thousands of people flocked around, literally. I saw people running to protest and to demonstrate across Italy in 100 squares. And there is an informal poll going around, circulating in Italy, whereby it would have 80% of Italy's population urging and wanting the government to take a very firm stand against Gaza. So the support is massive. Now, it needs to be said, this is not an official poll, it's not a government poll, and it's not an institutional poll. But I am told by sources that the Italian government cabinet has seen the numbers, and that it is raising concern.
Against Gaza, you say, I'm assuming you mean the actions of the Israeli military against the members of the flotilla. Now, many world leaders, we heard it in our report earlier, have criticized the flotilla's interception. What's the Italian government's stance here?
The actual poll is requesting that Italy recognize the state of Palestine as opposed to the flotilla. I think pretty much everyone in Italy agrees that the flotilla should be allowed to go through, because it is considered humanitarian action. And whilst the Italian government has fallen short of recognizing the Palestinian state and of calling the violence there genocide, it has very much underlined the fact that the flotilla flotilla is a humanitarian aid mission, so much so that the Italian government actually allowed for an Italian Navy frigate, an Italian Navy ship, to escort the flotilla, the 50-ship-strong flotilla, until yesterday, until it had to turn back, because obviously it was there to support and safeguard, but it could not be embroiled in any sort of warlike or aggressive actions that could have been looming up ahead.
Yeah. And Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has slammed Italy's largest union for calling a general strike for Friday. Do you expect people to follow the call? And if so, what kinds of disruptions could a strike cause?
Well, we've seen a flavor of the disruptions we can expect last week when many people, tens of thousands, took to the streets in Rome and in many of the big Italian cities. And we also saw some foresight last night when demonstrators occupied stations across the nation. The station of Naples, the station of Pisa were taken control of. So we're expecting many, many, many people out on the street because the incredible attraction of this protest for society in Italy is that it goes beyond political colors. The flotilla is considered a humanitarian mission. Many people are cheering on the last 10 boats that are managing to break through the blockade and are on their way to Gaza still, unless they're stopped before they arrive. Obviously, their arrival will be just a symbolic action because it's not going to do much to alleviate the suffering of a population that is under bombs and is under suffering severe famine and malnutrition. Yeah. But everyone is very much supporting this, and many people are expected out on the street.
Elena Trapattoni joining us from Milan in Italy today. Thank you so much.
That interview and report were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. Also, most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or can help support this show, PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Your donations are essential for this weekly production and distribution of the show to continue, which is supplied freely to more than 100 radio stations across the globe. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Trump is negotiating a $20 billion bailout for Argentina. Widespread sanctions were reinstated against Iran at the UN Security Council. The Israeli military continues to assault the Gaza Strip, while 453 Palestinians have now starved to death. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Donald Trump administration in the United States is negotiating a $20 billion financial bailout for Argentina, and said that a worsening economic crisis, largely due to austerity measures enacted by the right-wing Argentinian president and Trump ally, Javier Milei. Critics say that the move contradicts Trump's so-called America First policies by offering a lifeline, $20 billion, that's $20 billion with a B, to Argentina ahead of its midterm elections in October, which are currently very critical to the president maintaining power. Widespread United Nations sanctions, including an arms embargo against Iran, were reinstated over the weekend, marking the first time in 10 years that the full range of measures has been reimposed. The move follows the collapse of nuclear negotiations between Iran and Western powers, focused mainly on the United States, reigniting tensions surrounding Tehran's nuclear program for peaceful means. The sanctions, which took effect at midnight on Saturday, target Iran's nuclear and ballistic missile activities. They're also expected to worsen the country's already fragile economy just 3 months after Israeli and U.S. attacks on its peaceful nuclear facilities. The Iranian Foreign Ministry said in a statement, "Reactivation of the annulled resolutions is not only legally baseless and unjustifiable, all countries must refrain from recognizing this illegal situation." U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio called on Iran to engage in direct good faith talks and urged UN members to fully enforce sanctions to pressure Tehran's leadership. In a joint statement, the foreign ministers of the UK, France, and Germany reaffirmed their commitment to a diplomatic solution aimed at preventing Iran from developing nuclear weapons. They also called on Tehran to refrain from any escalatory action. Iran has recently allowed UN inspectors back into its nuclear facilities. President Masoud Pezeshkian said that the United States had only offered a temporary easing of sanctions in exchange for Iran surrendering its entire enriched uranium stockpile, a demand that he has rejected, the Iranian president, as totally unacceptable. The uranium is used for peaceful purposes of nuclear energy and not to produce a weapon. A last-minute bid by Russia and China to delay these sanctions until next April failed at the UN Security Council over the weekend, clearing the way for the measure to be taking effect as scheduled. Israel's military continues to assault the Gaza Strip. Palestinian officials say that Israeli attacks killed 50 people across Gaza on Monday and at least 37 since dawn on Tuesday. Among the latest dead are 20 civilians killed while waiting for food at an aid distribution site picked off by Israeli snipers and also U.S. mercenaries. Over the past 2 days, more Palestinians moved southward along Gaza's coastal road, fleeing Israeli ground forces who are flattening entire areas and neighborhoods of Gaza City as they go. Meanwhile, the number of Palestinians who have starved to death since just in the last couple of months, since March, has now risen to 453. Elid Mohar Aldu Bahan died of malnutrition and chest infections in Khan Yunis after Israeli troops blockaded access to food, infant formula, and other basic supplies. Upon her death, the 2.5-month-old infant weighed less than what she weighed at birth, and her thumb was actually wider than her ankle. More than 450 Palestinians have now starved to death in a situation of complete blockade of food, medical supplies, and infant formula for children.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website's working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report's been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I'm recuperating from a spinal injury, I'm staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.